Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul and faith.
Did you know an estimated 1.2 million people right here in the United States are living with or in remission from a blood cancer? Join ESPN The Game Nashville for Light the Night Walk at Nissan Stadium. That'll be Friday, November 2nd. You can be the difference in saving a life by being a part of the 2018 Light the Night Walk. For more details, or be a part of the event, or to contribute to the ESPN Game Nashville team, visit thegamenashville.com. We are awaiting Michael Gelkin, who's going to help us with the Raiders. A little preview on them. He's with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Hopefully we'll get him on here in just a second. A very nice tweet sent to us during the break, Willie, from Finland. Our friend at Sutu88. D-Mac and Willie D are the best. What a treat to be able to listen to these legends. Does that mean we're getting old? Have a great weekend, gents, and thanks for being your awesome selves. Darren and Donick, 102.5 The Game. You just made the list. Positive take.
Nice.
How about that?
By the way, Brant Snedeker, who shot the 59 yesterday, he is underway in round two at the Wyndham, even through three holes, so he's still 11 under, but his lead has been cut to one. CT Pan. I don't know much about him. He's having a really good round. He's 10 under at this point. So good luck, Brant.
By the way, we're looking forward to seeing Sutu88 at a Preds game this year.
Yes.
In Nashville. She said she's going to come all the way over from Finland. That'll be a lot of fun. Let's head out west. Let's bring in Michael Gelkin. He covers the Raiders. He's their beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing well. It's not every day I get a chat with a couple of legends, so
yeah,
no complaints here.
I guess that means we're getting old, I think.
I don't know about that.
Michael, we were actually just talking about the A's and what they're doing and the winning streak. Of course, the Sounds here in Nashville are the AAA team, and we were like, you know, what is that parking lot? Because if you know that area, and I know you're in Las Vegas, but you have to cover the team, that parking lot that has two buildings, what is it going to look like in 5 years? Is anybody going to be there? Is it just going to be a parking lot, an empty parking lot with no cars and two structures?
That's a great question. I live in Oakland, although I cover the Raiders for an outlet based in Las Vegas, so I should know the answer to that question in terms of the future of that district, because you're right, you have the Oracle Arena, then you have the Oakland Alameda Coliseum right there next door. And I don't know, there's a lot of land to work with, which you seldom have in California when it comes to building something. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
Yeah, maybe no teams, unfortunately. Golden State moving to San Francisco, Oakland to Las Vegas, and what is the future for the A's? What is the future for Khalil Mack? Where is this going?
Well, he's under contract for the 2018 season under the fifth-year team option. The Raiders can franchise tag him next year, and although no one in the organization would want to do this, they could franchise tag him the year after. So I've felt for a while, just given the distance between the two sides and the history of Khalil Mack's agent, Joel Siegel, he's so experienced in these sorts of negotiations. He's got a comfort with slow playing deals of this magnitude. And of course, when the Khalil Mack contract eventually is done, presuming it does get done at some point over the coming years, it's expected to leave Khalil Mack as the NFL's highest paid defender in league history. So this is a huge scale deal. It doesn't come around too often, but you look at what Joel Siegel did with one of his other clients, Trumaine Johnson. He got franchise tagged once with the LA Rams, and he got franchise tagged again. And then this March, he cashed in for agency, leaving the Rams for the New York Giants on a huge multi-year deal. Not saying necessarily that Joel Siegel is going to let Khalil Mack be franchise tagged multiple times. That would be jumping way too ahead. But I do think there is precedent in terms of how he negotiates, is waiting for what he feels is the best deal for his client. By the way, as a quick wrinkle to this whole thing, the Raiders are moving from the state with the highest income taxes in the country to one of the several states without any state income taxes in Nevada. That comes into effect in 2020. So theoretically, if the Raiders and Khalil Mack don't get an extension done this year, and they were to get it done, say, next year, Khalil Mack could defer his signing bonus payout from 19 to 2020 and save millions of dollars in terms of lack of state income taxes.
We know all about that living in Tennessee. No state income tax here either. Interesting.
That's
not what you make. It's what you keep.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was a travesty that the Raiders, we don't have Gruden versus Gruden in either preseason or the regular season. No Redskins Raiders this year.
It is too bad. I think this is the way the schedule comes up. Preseason, I suppose, there was an opportunity to get those two brothers together on the same field, but given the distance between, you know, just the East Coast, West Coast, you know, Raiders and Redskins, just being so, you know, far, I think it was probably just too difficult for the brothers to muster. It's only a matter of time. John Gruden's not going anywhere. 10-year contract, I'm sure it'll happen.
Okay, so what has he been like to deal with? Because rarely do we see these type of situations now. You know, sometimes they go out of sight, out of mind, and they go away, and then they come back, and that's even a more rare category. He was very, very visible. In fact, may have upped his profile being on Monday Night Football. What has he been like to deal with now that he's back into coaching?
From a media standpoint, he's been fantastic. And there's a number of layers to that. He has been extremely accessible to local media, which says something, given everybody from a national standpoint wants a piece of John Gruden. It's a huge story, him returning to an NFL sideline. And nonetheless, you see him take the time, invites the Raiders reporters to dinner one night this spring. And for press conferences, you know, he's a character. I mean, he can fill up a notebook, as we say. And so, you know, he's as seen on TV. He's as advertised. He is colorful, energetic, and on the field, he's firing, demanding. And I mean, he's John Gruden.
So what I think one of the themes, I'm sure you've written a few notebooks about it, is has he been able to keep up with the times? Is he going to be able to dive back in and be up to speed with everything? What has been the discussion there as you've observed this training camp?
I would say he has been, which I'll say it guardedly in terms of he's still somebody who honors the past. He believes in the value of the tradition of the league, tradition of the Raiders. He watches decades-old film in terms of presenting it to the team. Like, he'll show, we're talking about a two-minute drill in practice. Here's how Joe Montana did it in, you know, early 1990s. Or, you know, he'll just throw these, you know, Dan Marino, or, you know, go far back decades into like 70s. He'll put on these old game film, old practice film of NFL legends and show players the same technique that they're working on in practice. You think they're too good for this? It was good enough for Jerry Rice. It's good enough for Amari Cooper type of thing. And so there is a part of him that's very much in the past. But I think overall, when you look at it, he's trying to apply it to the future. He does actually have a lot more modern technology at his fingers than people would give him credit for. He seems no less advanced than other NFL coaches I've been around, which, you know, Jack Del Rio last year, the Raiders head coach, and I covered the Chargers in San Diego for 7 years, and so North Turner and Mike McCoy. John Gruden is right there, if not above the others.
Amari Cooper is a guy we discussed a lot. You know, we watched him closely in his days as a college player, and of course he was one of those guys getting talked about a lot when the Titans had a very high first-round pick, which they used on Marcus Mariota, but there was a lot of arguments, you know, what about Amari Cooper? I looked last year, 95 passes thrown to him, only 48 that he caught. What are the ideas about now? How do you get more efficiency out of a talented player like that?
He led the NFL, certainly the start of the season. I don't know how he finished the year, but he led the NFL in drop rate. So I think that's part of the reason his target to completion percentage was a bit low relative to, say, the previous year. Drops was something was a problem that surfaced his rookie year, and a year later he corrected it, and then last year, for whatever reason, it resurfaced. So the Raiders haven't seen any sign of, you know, Amari Cooper struggling with the drops in Napa, where they held training camp. I think the key, however, moving forward, is you look at what Amari Cooper did last season. Aside from week 17 100-yard game. He only had over 66 receiving yards once all season, and it was this 210-yard, two-touchdown explosion against the Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday Night Football. That game, more than any other game this all season, the Raiders had Amari Cooper in the slot. And I think that's something that falls on the coaching staff. Some of it falls on Amari in terms of the routes he's running or staying healthy or, as discussed earlier, the drop. But I think it's on the coaching staff to move him around, find ways to get the most out of him. There was a real lack of just everyone being on the same page in the offensive room last season for the Raiders. There's too many chefs in the kitchen. There's too many egos at times. I don't think offensive coordinator Todd Downing really was, as a first-year coordinator, was really able to get into a rhythm for a number of reasons behind the scenes. I think John Gruden, it's very clear with him here whose voice is the one that's being heard. He's the one calling plays. He's the one designing things. Even though he's the head coach, his hands and fingerprints are all over this Raiders offense, and his creativity, I would expect, would translate into more Amari Cooper in the slot and perhaps more Amari Cooper production.
A lot of intriguing personalities, as you're alluding to. So how about Marshawn Lynch? How would you evaluate his season last year, and what's the best way to utilize him now, 1 year later, with the new coach?
Marshawn had a bit of an uneven season last year when you look at it. I think part of it, just getting used to working behind a new offensive line, and there were some injuries up front, and not getting into a game flow in terms of carries because the Raiders were playing from behind a lot. Defense went 10, 11 full games without an interception to start the year, which was an NFL record. No team before had gone more than six games to start a season without interception. So field position, I mean, the game flow never really allowed Marshawn Lynch to get going. And then over the second half of the season, after a one-game suspension, Raiders just seemed to find that it just kind of clicked for Marshawn in terms of working behind the O-line, the shape at which he was physically, and then just being able to chew up, more than just a dozen carries. He led the NFL, was tied for the NFL lead in yards per carry over the second half last season. So I think the Raiders believe that can roll forward into 2018. Whether or not it does, we'll see. But his very first carry of the preseason last Friday, a week ago today, he took a 60-yard touchdown. And so they like where he is physically, mentally. He's locked in, and so the Raiders feel good overall about Marshawn Lynch. The real question is, Doug Martin is part of this backfield now. He's going to get involved. Jalen Richard out of the backfield as a receiver. How, with all the pieces in place that John Gruden really likes, is Marshawn going to be able to see 20 carries or 18 carries a game, which would help him get into a rhythm in the second half?
How do you think the atmosphere will be at the stadium as they continue to get closer and closer to actually leaving? We can all remember here in Nashville, the last year that the Oilers played in Houston, it was ugly. And, they were on their way out. But what's it like in Oakland? Last year they were coming off the great year, so there was excitement about the team. It didn't go very well last year, so what about this year?
Right, 6-10, a disappointment. Honestly, if you were to tell me that the Raiders were about to move, this is their second to last year in Oakland. Last year they played a full season after having just been approved to relocate to Las Vegas. I wouldn't have, based on how the stadium felt, believed it. There's something about Raiders fans, and like you, I have a point of reference too in terms of what a city feels like when it's losing a team, from being in San Diego where the Chargers were for 56 years. Just being in, it was a different situation because fans there weren't sure, the final home game of the season, whether or not it was the last game ever in San Diego, but you could just feel it in the stands, especially in 2015 when they thought the game was going to be the last one and it ended up not being. It was just so emotional. Fans staying an hour after the game. It was so, you could just tell what it meant to the city to lose that team. I want to be clear, so many people here in Oakland are hurting about the idea of losing the Raiders. The inevitability of it looms. But they're still here, first off. There's John Gruden coming back. Last year, they were coming off a 12-4 year. This year, I think Gruden helps rekindle that fire that may have been lost with disappointment from last season. And there's just this community ubiquitous principle to being Raider Nation. It's not just a slogan. You go and follow the Raiders over the course of a road schedule, and they're everywhere. There's so many Raiders fans, and they're used to relocation. You know, they've been to Los Angeles and back, and Las Vegas is kind of neutral territory where there's really no sports rivalries between Bay Area or Los Angeles each in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is kind of everybody's playground, so it's kind of fitting for a team to play there that has fans seemingly everywhere. So there's this ride or die mentality that unless you're around it, you wouldn't believe it almost, but Raiders fans, by and large, however hurting they may be and sad to see the Raiders go, they, as much as they can be expected to, are following this team to the end.
No doubt it's a brand. Michael, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
You bet, guys. Take care.
Michael Galkin, he covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We'll be back to wrap up the third hour of Darren and Donick next.